It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 635. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. My Skype name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/miketechshow. Facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com or just go over to instanthousecall.com and remember to use the promo code Mike Tech Show and get your 15-day free trial. And the show is brought to you by Malwarebytes TechBench Toolset, the all-in-one package of utilities to help you diagnose, repair, and secure Windows PCs. I use that tool on every first system that I run into, and it gives me that quick analysis of everything that's going on with the system. It is the first and most important tool on my USB stick. Tonight's show, and it's strange recording this on a Wednesday night. I'm tied up tomorrow night. I'm actually going to be at a concert with a client at the Tower Theater. I'm seeing Evanescence with their full symphony. I'm looking forward to that. That'll be a little different. Tonight's show, more Outlook troubles. I have some more links on some extreme things to do with Outlook because I am still besieged with Outlook problems with clients. And if I'm living this nightmare with Outlook, you have to be living it also. Thank you, Microsoft. So a couple of those links. I am going to talk about syncing two Synologies that I went through this with a client, how to disable or uninstall OneDrive, then Uptime Robot, and then submitting a request to remove an account from Gmail. Going to talk about that. These are all things that I've had to work on for clients over the last 2 weeks. And then I have one email with an oldie problem that we've talked about in the past. So we're going to address that. Let's start with the hard Outlook problems. The first is the password issue. This dreaded password. We enter the correct password, but that's not enough. This is an Exchange hosted. These clients are SureWeb, and I know this is not a SureWeb problem. Opening a ticket and talking to SureWeb tech support, they've given me a couple links on trying to resolve this, and I'm going to go over it because it's not obvious. It's not easy. Some interesting things to try. I've tried these, and I've actually solved one problem and created another. Now, this is when you are continuously prompted for a password, and you're entering the right password with the right credentials to be authenticated, but a few minutes later, it pops up again. One way from a command line to add an account, an entry into the credential manager. All these things require you to open a command prompt as administrator. Once you do that, this first link is using command key, CMDKEY. You need the email address with the right domain and the password for that email account. This first link has the command line and all of the syntax. You have to type CMDKEY /add:, and then asterisk dot and the domain name, abc.com. Then a space slash user colon and the full email address. Then simply space slash pass colon and the password, which is case sensitive. Hit enter, and this entry will be properly submitted and added to the Windows Credential Manager. Now, you can manually do this going to Credential Manager, or you could just do it right from the command line using this CMD key. I wanted to review this because it works. I've done it. And for some clients, this will fix that issue. But on others, we had to resort to more drastic means. And then I still have another client that it's not fixed at all. This one was very interesting. They're saying that the September patches for Outlook caused this problem, and it has not been resolved yet. So one of the things you have to do is make sure you're disabling Office updates here. So it's in direct contradiction of what we preach and what we want, which is have the latest, greatest updates. Well, what if there's an update that is causing us severe problems? We got to stop the update. And that's easy to do with Office because you can navigate to where the option is where you can select from a dropdown, do not update Outlook, disable all updates. If you want to revert back to a previous version of Office Click to Run, this only works with Office 2013 and 2016. For 2016, it gets tricky. You have to open as an administrator, the command prompt, and then you have to change to a directory called Program Files, Common Files, Microsoft Shared, Click to Run. Then you got to know exactly what version you want to go to. So the second link gives you the syntax of what you have to type. The third link in the show notes tonight is the link that gives you every exact version of Office and their updates. If we want to go back to the August 29th update, that is build 8326.2096. That's important because you need those exact numbers. Then you go back to the command line and you put that with this for Office 2016. In that directory, it's office2rclient.exe /update /user, then /update2version equals, and you put 16.0 for 2016, and then dot those digits. You click enter, it will go online and it will download and take you back. I did this today for a client, and about 10, 15 minutes, it took it back to that version from August 29th. So you can go back with Office 2013 or 2016. This is the first time I've ever had to do this. And you can roll it back to any previous version. It's actually pretty cool that we can do this and do it from the command line. I was not prompted for their Microsoft account credentials, but have that ready. So test it by going to account.microsoft.com, log in, and make sure you can successfully log in. Then you have to confirm that you have the user's email password. So if it's Exchange hosted, you got to go to OWA Online and successfully log in where you are typing the email address and the exact password for your client. Because these are two main passwords that you need. You need the Microsoft account password for their Office 365, and then you need their email password. Once you have that, then you can execute these. The prerequisite, you got to have and confirm the right passwords. And let me tell you, that's a challenge. My clients, I have to secure and keep all their passwords, and then they'll change it and not tell me, because if something happened and they needed to type it, they forgot it, they reset it. And then they don't remember what they reset it to. And I don't know what they reset it to, but they expect me to remember. That's another challenge. Enough with Outlook. I think we've spent a lot of time, and you now have, between the last show and tonight, you have lots of Outlook troubleshooting ideas and recommendations to go forth and solve Outlook problems. But I am still having a problem with one client where it's crashing, and we're at a point where I think they only have one add-in, and I think this is a critical add-in for them. And right now he's up and running in safe mode. I have to contact the manufacturer of the software manufacturer of this particular add-in to see why it's making Outlook 2016 crash, because that's the only add-in we're not loading and we're not launching on startup, and it's working. We go into regular mode and we crash. And I've completely did a full repair. I've done everything. I've done everything we've talked about. Syncing two Synology NASs. So have a client that purchased a newer, bigger NAS. Newer, faster Synology. And we need to migrate. And I was using rsync. And I did get one successful sync using the rsync setup and command instructions. No joy after that one time. I now was ready to migrate and we're ready to convert over and I needed to do a final sync. I couldn't get a sync. These two Synologies are sitting beside each other on the same gig switch. And I'm having trouble with one finding the other. Well, actually, it could see it, but then when it would go to execute, it would fail. Cloud Station Server and Cloud Station Drive worked perfectly. And the next link in the show notes is a tutorial to set up syncing with Cloud Station. You invoke Cloud Station Server on the system that has the source files. You set up Cloud Station Drive on the target and point it, and you use, it's very simple, you're using your Quick Connect ID that you've set up, and it pops up beautifully with all the folders that you want to sync. You can pick them all. Then you can actually pick what direction you want to sync. So I made sure that it was only coming from the server. So I wanted a full update coming from the server down to the client, which is the newer NAS. I did this and then went away. We rescheduled a couple days later. It was syncing perfectly. I would create a directory on the one NAS, and I mean within seconds, it was created on the next one. So I made sure, one final check, that all files and directories were completely synced. Then I did a backup of the credentials and the settings. So all the accounts, all the shares, all of those NAS settings. I backed it up to a file on a desktop. So I just used a browser to log in. Then I renamed the Quick Connect ID and renamed that server because we're retiring it. And if they ever turn it on, I don't want that machine name to be the same because I have multiple systems already shared to this first Synology. So I want this new one to be the same name. Now, once that's shut off, I log into the new one. I change the name to the old name because that no longer exists. I change the Quick Connect ID. Then I upload the settings and I restore the settings that I exported from the other NAS. Instantly, all of the shares and map drives and everything for the company worked perfectly. So I had a seamless migration. Now, if you read all of the different options for migration, some of them are horrible. We got to take the drives out of the one and stick it into the, I didn't want to go through that. These were two very different models. I'm here to say that the Cloud Station syncing works great. As a matter of fact, what we're going to do is put larger drives in the smaller NAS, the old one. That's going to go to the owner's house. He has a very fast internet connection at both places. I'm going to set up a sync. So this way at night, those two Synology NASs, where actually we can have a regular sync where even during the day, anything happening, it could be mirrored to this NAS sitting at home. And we now got a live backup of another NAS that is, in case there's any kind of a problem, we got the other NAS. There's lots of versatility for the Synology NAS. You hear me talk about them all the time. I've got them in a lot of clients, some work groups. I have them for small clients. I have them in some bigger clients. A lot of them are using it for their own hosted Dropbox connection because you can access these files from anywhere in the world, from outside the company, using the Quick Connect ID, and you can layer all the permissions that you need. And you can have an iPad or an iPhone or an Android and access directories for files. So I have lots of people, like an inspection company, and all the pictures for their inspections. They were killing OneDrive, and it was, They were killing Dropbox, and they were spending a fortune for large Dropbox storage. They now eliminated that and replaced it with their own Synology NAS. And it's being backed up locally to a USB connected, a big drive. We're using an online backup that it's backing up every night. And we're syncing it to another Synology at another location. We have their data completely covered, completely backed up. All right. Next, how to disable OneDrive. This is an ugly little process that I'm going to link here from a website called Windows Central. So you have to edit the group policy on the machine, on the local machine. You click Windows R, type gpedit.msc, click OK. You have to go to Administrative Templates, Windows Components, then double-click the OneDrive folder. And then you got to double click on prevent the usage of OneDrive for file storage. Click the option button beside the word enable and click OK. That's it. But it's not obvious. You wouldn't think about that. You would think, boy, why can't I just go to Control Panel and remove OneDrive? Well, you can't. It's really integrated into Windows 10. This is the only way to stop it from working if you don't want OneDrive. Now, I actually like OneDrive, and I use OneDrive because it is the one storage where with my Office 365 account, I have a terabyte of storage across all my platforms, my Windows, my Mac, my iMac, my MacBook, my multiple iPads, and my iPhone. I have complete synchronization of the files that I want wherever I'm at. Now, remember, I always have access to all my files through my own Synology, but OneDrive has its place for me. And if you need a storage area across multiple platforms, OneDrive is a good place to look. I actually like it, but then there's a lot of people, they're tired of all the notifications and the pop-ups and everything about OneDrive because they don't want to use it. They don't intend to use it. This is how you get rid of it. So I had to do that for a client. Now, here is another link, and this is for checking every 5 minutes if a system is up or not that's available on the internet. You can monitor 50 devices totally free. I'm actually monitoring a couple servers right now to see that they're up, and if they reboot or something happens, then I want to go in and I want to check something. So this is good and it's free. They have some other services to do more and to get more alerts. UptimeRobot.com is a good place to start for a free service to check on the uptime of devices. Next, client contacted me as a referral, actually. His wife passed away a couple months ago. He wants to disable the Gmail account that his wife had. He doesn't even want the mail. And there are separate forms for different requests, but this was a request for a deceased user's account to be deleted. And this is the official Google Gmail form, the Google account form that I'm going to have in the show notes. You have to put the full name of the deceased person, the email address, then the relative or legal representative, so the person filling this out, their email address, what your relationship is, then the country, the zip code, date of death, whether you want the Google account or the YouTube account. And now you have an upload button. You have to upload a scanned image of the your driver's license, and then you have to upload a scanned image of the death certificate and then any additional documents. And this will start the request for deletion of someone's account. It's the first time I've ever had to do this, and I had the request, and I was glad that I was able to shepherd the request for this individual, because when you start Googling for things like this and you start trying to search, you may not be brought to the proper place. This is the form for Google online that you would fill out to request an account to be deleted. Boy, I got through all that pretty quick. I have an email here that I want to get to, and this is from Robert. Hello, Mike. I have a Windows 10 desktop that I've been trying to get Windows 10 updated, and it keeps getting stuck at 87%, and it freezes there, and I've had to hard shut down. Sometimes it will do a restore, and then I can get into Windows, and then it starts over again. I have gone and did a delete of the Windows download update and re-downloaded it, and no joy. I have tested the hardware, and they all pass. I have also used a different hard drive, and that did not work. My thought was in case the hard drive was bad, but tested it, and it did the same thing. Thanks for your help. Robert, a couple things, and I'm not sure if you're trying to do an update, but if you put a different hard drive in, I would assume this is a clean install. So I now want to review what is the process that you're trying to install Windows 10. I want to make sure you're going to the right place and you got the Windows Media Toolkit. And the latest one will give you the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update. I want you to build a bootable USB stick. It does a lot of verification. As a matter of fact, I had my one system here where it kept failing on even building that USB. And I had to take it to another computer, it built correctly. So you got to make sure you've got a good, solid, bootable media. And then boot from that USB stick. Don't do an update. Pick that second option. And I want you to blow away every partition on that drive. Blow it away. Then you're going to see everything as one big available partition. Select that. Windows 10 will create a secondary partition, which is required for the install, but it'll default on the big partition. It takes like 100 megs or something for itself. And then continue with the Windows 10 install. I want to hear your process on doing the Windows 10. Now, if you're doing an in-place update, if you can navigate to a command prompt as administrator, type net space stop space WUAUSERV. That's the Windows Update Service. Make sure you do that. And that, believe it or not, stopping the update service, I know that makes no sense. It's counterintuitive, but it actually lets the updates continue. When I was doing an in-place update and it would get stuck, that would actually help. And then what you would do, which you said you went in and deleted the downloads directory for the software distribution, but you have to stop the service. Then you delete that directory. try these things, but I really want you to make sure that you have good boot media that you're trying to do the install. Because if you keep failing and it's the same media, then try a different USB stick. If you're having trouble with getting the bootable USB, do a bootable DVD if there is an optical drive, if there's an optical DVD drive in the system, and then boot from that. But I don't want you to boot from the hard drive. I want you to boot from the USB. Now, and this has happened a lot, if you are going through that first boot of Windows 10 after you install and it goes back to booting from your media, go into the BIOS and you got to play with the boot options on the BIOS to get the hard drive to boot. I've done this with SSDs where sometimes we had to go back and load the defaults into the BIOS in order to get the new SSD with the new Windows 10 booting correctly, making sure that that is the primary boot device. So a few things to try, you know, you might have to check the BIOS, but I don't think that's it. That's going to be after a successful install and it's the first boot. But I would like you to do a clean install. Now, of course, before you would dare do that, if you're doing any kind of an update, you make sure you have solid backups of all your data and that you have, for the software to reinstall, you have all of the downloads or the media that you need to reinstall all the software. That means you need product keys, serial numbers, maybe any kind of things that you need to activate the license, and passwords, because maybe you're doing that online. You got to make sure you have all of that before you begin that install. That is it for tonight's show. I want to thank everybody for downloading and staying subscribed. I really appreciate your support. That's it for tonight's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Please continue to email me any questions or problems that you have or you would like, or topics you would like me to discuss. That's miketechshow@gmail.com. Please remember to support the sponsors Instant House Call and Malwarebytes TechBench Toolset. That's it. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.